Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, a culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew, and tonight with me is my co-host, Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hello, Andrew. We are thrilled tonight to welcome Kate Kendrick to the show. She's a former member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormon Church. Kate has built an incredible online community across several platforms, including TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube, where she shares her journey of leaving the faith and navigating life beyond it. She's now taking her story to the next level with her brand new podcast called An Ex-Mo and a Never-Mo Walk Into a Bar. By the time our episode airs, her podcast will already be up and running, so you should be able to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Kate, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Melody, and thank you, Anonymous Andrew, for having me on.
My pleasure. Can you say the name of the podcast again?
It's called An Ex-Mo and a Never-Mo Walk Into a Bar.
Okay. You'll have to explain that one to me, but okay. Okay.
So, yeah, it's a little niche. An Ex-Mo is short for ex-Mormon, which I consider myself to be. And I live in Utah, which is Mormon Central. And once I left the church, I began to learn about the ex-Mormon community. And I learned that we call people who have never been Mormon who live in Utah are called Never-Mos. So I have a dear friend, Erica, who moved to Utah about 3 years ago. And when she walked into her workplace and was surrounded by 75 or more percent Mormons, she thought, where am I? What is going on? And so she and I have had incredible conversations about the church and faith deconstruction. And we decided that we would help with faith deconstruction surrounding the Mormon culture on our podcast.
Okay, now I get it.
Yeah, sorry. We are also filming in a bar. We're recording all of those at a local bar, and we get to do it over cocktails, which is a lot of fun.
That sounds interesting.
Oh,
wow.
That is fun. But that is similar to Andrew and I. I am an ex-cult member, and Andrew has never been in a cult. So it's a similar concept to where Andrew asks very different questions than I ask guests based on that, and it does make for a more dynamic show because you have very different perspectives.
Agreed. Yeah.
I have, it's a long story, but I have a sincere interest in the cult world. I stumbled upon it, and the audience, some of them know the story. And yeah, I my questions will come out of left field, and because a lot of times it's either ignorance or naivety or just logic sense. Like, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
But what cult does, right? But there's no cult makes any sense. So anyway, begin with your story.
So I was born and raised in the Mormon church. I think I'm about seventh or eighth generation Mormon. So my parents, their parents, etc. My ancestors were pioneers. In Utah, we take our pioneer heritage very seriously. We have a lot of pride around that. My dad, growing up, was an institute teacher, which means he worked for the church, but at an institute, which is, it's kind of like study for church outside of church for college age students. And so not only do you get the education at church, you also get to get it 5 days a week when you're a teenager in high school, and then you get it whenever you take classes when you're in college. And so my dad, that was his career, and had a lot of leadership positions in the church, and we were all very invested. Everyone needed to have positions in the church. And so I was raised as a devout member. I was the fourth of six kids, three boys, three girls. Big families are very common in Mormon culture. We're very much into families can be together forever and have as many children as you can. I went on a mission when I was 21 years old, meaning I went on a proselytizing mission. I went to Florida, Fort Lauderdale. I learned Spanish to teach the people there. When you are a missionary for the church, you pay your own way. And so I lived away from my family for a year and a half to proselytize. Had a lot of mental health challenges there because I didn't yet realize I was in a cult, and it was a lot of cognitive dissonance I could not make sense of. But I stayed true and faithful. I had callings or assignments in the church, which are unpaid positions. I was over the Relief Society, which means I was over the group of women. I was the young women's president, so I was over the group of young women from 11 to 18. I served in the temple. There are lots of Mormon temples you may see. There are 150 or more now, I think, in the world. And I was working really, really hard to understand this gospel. But right before my 45th birthday, about a year and a half ago, I came to this place, the space in my mind where I just couldn't make sense of this. I had been married in the temple twice, first to my first husband, and then was divorced, and then again to my second husband. I had one child from my first marriage, and this child came out as trans. And they were 16 years old at the time, and I could not wrap my head around that, because growing up in this church, I learned that the LGBT community was wrong. And they were just confused, and this was their cross to bear, and someday they would be exalted in heaven as long as they stayed celibate their whole lives, you know, didn't act out on their urges. And my child and I struggled. We butt heads for a really long time because they said to me, "Mom, this is who I am." And I said, "No, you're not. You're just confused because of the teachings of this church." I know it's not unique to Mormonism, but Mormonism, it falls under the umbrella of Christianity, and it was really challenging for me. And it was about spring of 2023. This child of mine was in a professional theater production, and they got to play themselves. And so kind of, it was scripted, but they were able to introduce themselves. And everyone in the cast and in the production company saw this child and used their preferred name and pronouns. And I saw my child light up with this community. And I thought, I've been robbing my child of the love that they deserve. And so that was one of those moments where I said, I can choose either the doctrine of the church or I can choose my child. I choose my child. Or that was one of the things that I did to get me to that was one of the steps before leaving the church. The second was that at that time, I had been teaching elementary school for 18 years. And my second husband said to me that he had received revelation from the Lord that he needed to take a job out of state in the Pacific Northwest. And he said, "I really feel strongly about this." And I said, "That's cool. But my kid from my first marriage has another 2 years of high school. Can you wait 2 more years for this child to graduate and then we could go?" And he said, "Nope, the Lord says we need to do it now. And I'm going to go with or without you." And I was put in a position where I literally had to choose between my husband and my child, my only child, because this kid did not want to go. This kid said, "No, my dad is here in Utah. My friends are here in Utah. I don't want to go start a life in another state with you." And I said, "Well, let me decide." And I did make the decision at the time that I would move. So I resigned from teaching. I And I did so because the friends that I'd talked to it within the church, and I said, this is my dilemma. I have to choose between moving out of state with my husband or staying here with my child. And they said, you made covenants with your husband and with God in the temple of the Lord. So you need to choose your husband. And so I did. And I felt just sick about it. I promised this kid, you know what, we're going to fly you up to visit. I'm going to come back and visit you. We'll FaceTime every night. But deep down, like, my heart was just breaking. Fast forward to July of that year of 2023, my husband had to go out of state for 2 months of training before being transferred to the office where he was going to work. And I was stayed behind so I could do a semester of grad school, so I could make sure the house was sold and packed up. And then I would meet him 2 months later after Labor Day. And while I was commuting to school, every day I had like a half hour drive, and I was thinking, this doesn't make sense. This is not right. This is not okay. What kind of loving God would make a mother choose between her husband and her child? What kind of God would do that? And I just started thinking, and I listened to a podcast, which was called Latter-day Struggles, because we're Latter-day Saints as members of the church. This podcast was designed for people who were struggling with their faith, and it was hosted by a therapist. And for the first time in my life, I felt validated, where a lot of the concerns I had about the church around polygamy, for example, and how Black men were not allowed to get the priesthood or the authority from God until 1978, the year I was born, those things didn't make sense to me. And this revelation that my husband received didn't make sense to me. And I started to question all of these things. And ultimately, I decided I had to know the truth for myself. I had a girlfriend who had left the church about a year and a half before I had, and she had kind of walked me through her faith deconstruction process, but she was respectful of my boundaries. I would say, you know what, that's not okay that you tell me those things, and she was super respectful, but I knew she was in a lot of pain, and her husband left her because she chose to leave the church. I reached out to this friend and said, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for all of the documents that tell the truth that I've been avoiding. What are they? And she said, are you ready? Because it's a lot. And I said, yes, I'm ready. And she said, all right, you're going to read this document called the CES letter. You're going to read another document called A Letter to My Wife. And the church had put out these things called the Gospel Topics Essays, which were on the church's website, which was basically an apologist approach to all of the church history that made zero sense. So this was the last week of that semester of grad school, and I reached out to my professors and I said, I cannot focus on school right now. My entire worldview is crashing around me. I cannot focus. I'm going to have to take a hit on my grade. I can't. And I spent 3 solid days doing nothing but going down a rabbit hole of reading these documents and learning the true history of the church, which I had never been told before, and realized with logic and with understanding that I had been lied to my whole life. At 45 years old, I felt like I had been deceived. A lot of ex-Mormons like myself, or maybe people who leave a cult, look at movies like The Matrix or Tangled, or Truman Show, those shows where you live in this bubble for this long period of time, and then suddenly you come out of the bubble and a lot of emotions. At first, I was relieved. Members of the church cannot drink. We're not allowed to drink alcohol. So as soon as I finished everything and I realized that all of it was a lie, I texted some friends of mine who had left the church before I had, and I said, none of it's true. Let's get drunk. And so they invited me to one of their houses, and they threw me a coming out of the church party because they knew how hard it was. And there were about 8 of them, and they just mothered me. And they said, this is how you drink alcohol. You need to make sure you have food. You need to make sure you have water. And they listened to my story, and we laughed, and we cried, and we just had this incredible connection because they understood what it was like. It's painful, but at the same time, it's so beautiful and liberating. And so I have left the church, and I'm not looking back. I can't unlearn what I've learned about it. And I am also really, I'm speaking out against the church, using my social media presence as part of my faith deconstruction process, but I really want to help other people to do the same. I want them to feel validated. I want them to feel, I want them to experience empathy, which a lot of members of the church don't know how to give. Oftentimes when a member, a person leaves the church, they receive ostracization. I mean, they're ostracized. They are cut off from family and friends because they don't understand. And I know that's true for a lot of cults. And I know you've talked about the bite model before. Yep. That's true for cults, is a lot of people lose their relationships. This all happened right before my 45th birthday. And I reached out to my husband, who was out of state, and I said, "Hey, I just need you to know that I am leaving the church." And he said, "How could you do this to me?" And I said, "This is my faith, not yours. And I just need you to know that this is the path that I'm choosing." And he came back after having read the documents that I shared with him, and he said, "Well, I've read it all and I still believe." And he asked, "Do you think that we could make a mixed faith marriage work?" And I said, "No, because you put me in a position to choose between you and my only child. And you did, none of this was consensual. You made a decision to move our family out of state without my consent. I think, no, we cannot stay married because a marriage is hard enough to begin with. And it needs to have mutual respect. And I'm not feeling that." And so we decided to get divorced a year and a half ago. And it was finalized in November of that year. At the same time, our house had just sold right before this decision to leave the church. So I had the month of August to pack up the house, to file for divorce, to deconstruct my faith, to find a job and a new place to live. And it was incredibly overwhelming, but at the same time, I felt so liberated from these restrictions that I had growing up in a very high demand religion. And I felt as though I was entering my teenage years or my early 20s while in my mid 40s, because now all of a sudden I could drink alcohol for the first time. I could drink coffee if I wanted to. I could throw away my special underwear, what they call garments. I had so much freedom that I had never experienced before. I turned 45 that same week. I decided to divorce my husband, and I made a great big Facebook post, and to everybody in the world, because everybody knew I would be moving out of state. They knew that I had resigned and was going to find a job up there. And I made a Facebook post to all of my friends on my birthday saying, "Hey, 45, I'm midlife, and welcome to my midlife crisis. I'm no longer moving out of state because my husband and I are getting divorced. I need you to know that I'm leaving the faith." And because a lot of my friends were members of the church, and I led with empathy. I said, "I know there are going to be a lot of you who aren't going to understand this. I know what it's like. This is going to be hard. And you can respond however you choose. If it's anger or support or disinterest, that's fine. If you have any more questions about it, I'm happy to share those with you, but I'm not going to be preaching this to you. I also need a job and I need a place to live. Help me out." And I did get a place to stay for a while, and it was wonderful. I was surprised. I'm not going to lie. I was surprised when I put that out. I had an overwhelming response of love and support from people who were not members of the church and people who were. I did lose some friends, though. There were some friends who are members of the church said, "Well, you're making a mistake. And how dare you talk out against our church," and unfriended me. And, oh, well, that's a loss that I'm not going to miss, because I don't believe they were loving me as a friend to begin with.
Melody, did you have a question?
I do have one question. Well,
go for it.
My first question is, does the Mormon church participate in disfellowshipping, shunning, excommunication? Is that something that they do when you leave?
Yes, they do. It depends on the level of, it depends on what you did. If you were, if you openly speak out against the church, they will have what's called a disciplinary council. Sometimes they call it a court of love, but it is incredibly shaming for people. I've never participated in one because only the men are allowed to participate as members of this court. But the men who are who are the only ones who are allowed to hold the priesthood will hold this disciplinary council. I do have friends who have been excommunicated for openly questioning the church, for having sexual relationships out of marriage, for a variety of things. And in this court, they could either disfellowship you, they put you on stricter things where you're not allowed to take the sacrament, which is a big part of the Mormon faith each Sunday. You're not allowed to hold a calling or say prayers in church, but they still expect you to go. And of course, they want your 10% tithing, which we can get to in a minute. So there have been friends that I know that have been disciplined and excommunicated to leave the church on of your own will. You could just stop going, but your records belong to the church. From the moment you're born, they know your birth date, they know your address, they know everything about you, and they will come after you. They will send missionaries to you. They will send members of the church to you to try to recruit, reactivate you because you are an inactive member. I didn't want any of that. So my teen and I decided to leave the church, and a little after leaving, we had to get a lawyer to have our records removed. We had to submit a request. We had to go to get the request notarized because my child was a minor and request this membership. So I think that's also a cult tactic where they will baptize you.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, you're 8 years old. They're 8 years old, and you can make the decision to join the church when you still believe in Santa Claus. You don't have the cognitive abilities to make that decision when you're that young, and yet you need a lawyer to leave.
All right. Let's go back to your child for just a second. So when your child came out as trans, were they allowed to come to church?
Yes, they were allowed to come to church, and it really depends on the leadership. We call it bishop roulette because you have a bishop who is a lay clergy. It depends on, I mean, it's just roulette on the leader. We had a young women's president who was the leader over this organization who was phenomenal for my child as he was leaving.
So they were like progressive.
Yeah, she was very, very progressive, but the bishop was not. He was really harsh and judgmental. It's a crapshoot, really, on what kind of leadership you get in your local congregation.
I have one more question about your child. In the Mormon church, when do they consider a child to be an adult?
Probably the same time as the rest of the world, at about 18. But they can do that. Of course, when they're 21, they're not allowed to take alcohol. Can't do that. Right. But yeah, I would think that about 18 is the time you're an adult.
Because my question, the reason for that question, I'm guessing that you might be able to guess where I'm going with this, is that you were told by people in the church that you had a covenant with your husband, but you also had a responsibility to your child because your child was under 18. So to me, that responsibility would weigh at least just as heavy as a covenant with your husband. That's just me putting in my two cents on that because
Melody, and I agree with you, but that's your, as an ex-cult member now and a podcast host, you look back at that, and as a mother, that's correct. But you got to remember, I can't believe I'm saying this. You got to remember, this is coming from these bishops and these elders who are just following the old rules, and the LGBTQ community was an abomination to them. And it was like that in the Christian, the Roman Catholics I grew up. If you were gay, you were not allowed to get married. You were not allowed to come to church. And so,
I hear all that, but I have a question. Then I guess I have another question for you, Kate. Was the reason that they told you that you needed to follow your husband out of state and abandon your child essentially because your child was trans, or was it just because it did that not have any factor in it? Was it just, oh, you have to follow your husband regardless of what condition your child was in or what your child was going through?
I believe it was more of the first of, there is definitely a hierarchy in the church. The commitment that we've been taught is always number one, devotion to God or the church. Number two, devotion to your spouse. And then number three, which I always think is if you have time, your children. Just because I know that so many men in the church, I know it's a patriarchal society, but patriarchy hurts men just as much as it hurt. Well, no, I would say women are hurt more, but patriarchy hurts men too, where men have full-time jobs. They're the sole providers for their families. And then they're called to be bishops, these lay clergymen for their wards or congregations. And so they're putting in 40 hours at work, plus maybe another 25, 30 at church. And then they come home and are expected to be the wife or the husband to their wife and the father to their children. And oftentimes what happens is the wife feels so neglected and the husband feels so bad, he tries to give her attention. There's a lot of cases of abuse where the wife feels neglected and then takes it out on the children, because you can't speak up against the church. It's got to be someone's fault, so let's take it out on the kids.
Remember I said to you earlier that you might get a question from left field or a comment?
Yes.
Okay, well, here comes one. So you, your husband, and your child are in a boat, and it's sinking, right? And in order to save two of you, one of you has to jump into the water, and you may or may not drown, but you have to get out of the boat. This is an old story or thing that you hear in society, and it's always the child is chosen to stay in the boat. The adult, because the child is young and has a whole life ahead of it. One of the adults will sacrifice themselves to save the child. The same when the airline masks come down, you put the oxygen. So I think in our society, it's the child always comes first, and in any marriage, I know the sanctimonious of a marriage is sacred, especially if it's bonded in religion. Mm-hmm. But you bring children into this world and
accepting.
So
it makes sense now. Like hindsight is 2020, but at the time I really struggled with it.
Oh, I'm validating you now. Yeah. I'm just saying it's just absurd to abandon your child. Melody, we had somebody on very early who the child came over to South Africa and the mother stayed somewhere else. She basically abandoned her child. I think
her children were trans as well.
Yeah. Oh, were they? Yes, they were. Yeah.
Yes.
So I had a very unfortunate news this morning. A colleague of mine at work lost his 30-year-old son to cancer, and he passed last night, and we're at work, we're all just devastated. It's our children are just so, they come first in my world, and I would jump in front of a speeding train to save my child. Anyway, I have three boys, and now I have grandchildren. My life is not worth, they are young, they're 8, 10, 12, 15, 30, whatever. They have a whole life ahead of them. Anyway, I will go off on a tangent. Sometimes I get stuck on these topics because it, to me, like I said before, it boggles my mind and it just doesn't make sense. And
there was actually a really inspiring story. I don't know if you're familiar with the artist David Archuleta. He was second place in American Idol 15 some odd years ago. And he was a stalwart member of the church, of the Mormon church. And we all just adored him. He was a household name because he was a Mormon. He was a celebrity. And he was living a stalwart life, had gone on a mission. And then he came out as gay. And then he also decided to leave the church because it was hard for him to be gay and a member of the church. And his mother, Lupe, who is a hero in my mind, at first, she went to him and said, "David, I love you, but I love God more." And that doesn't surprise me. But then she came back a few days later and she said, "You know what? David, if the church says that you're going to go to hell, then we're going to go to hell together. And she up and left the church to support her child. And he wrote this beautiful song called Hell Together that was released last April. I did a TikTok video about it. It went viral. Good Morning America found it and flew both myself and my child out this last summer for Pride.
Good for you.
It was wonderful. But I look at that story and I think that's what mothers are put in a position to choose. Like, we have to choose between our child and our God because of the story of Abraham and Isaac. God says, hey, Abraham, why don't you go murder your son Isaac for us? And then Abraham is viewed as a hero in the Bible because, yeah, he takes his son up to an altar and he's going to sacrifice his son. And people revere him for that.
Yeah, which is why I think the Bible is just ridiculous.
I agree.
Yeah, it's a compilation of 2,000 plus years of people contributing stories, and it has been translated over and over so many times. And the version that we have today, no matter what version, whatever cult, sect, religion, denomination, they twist it and they, what's the word? They spin it to meet their agenda. And,
absolutely.
Yeah. The Bible is, I do not believe any, and the Quran and any teachings that are 1500 years old.
Right.
You know, you can't trust the words that are in there because they've been manipulated. So anyway, right. I'm going off on one of my tangents. Sorry.
All right.
So you divorced your husband. Mm-hmm. And he moved up to the Pacific Northwest, and you stayed home with your child.
Uh-huh.
And take us from there. Where are you guys today?
Well, it's actually been quite a difficult road for us. I've gone through plenty of jobs. I feel like I'm figuring out who I am for the first time in my life. Finally, being able to lean into my authenticity. So yes, I am here still in Utah, at least until my teen graduates from high school this coming June. And I have the whole world in front of me. I tried going back to teaching. It did not fit. I've tried several different jobs, was fired from a job just this last August when I finally found something. The job market was really tough. And so I've made this decision to focus on online content creation, and I'm looking to help people through their faith crises.
Yeah, and you can do very well in podcasting or online content creation, and the podcast industry is a labor of love. The podcast you're about to launch could literally take 2 years before it's even. I have a podcast on the side from this, and it's already almost 2 years old. And while I have a significant amount of downloads, it's not making money yet. But right. I think at the end of this year, it will. So I think maybe you found your niche. I think you're right. Content creation, get the word out, and podcast. Are you going to be on YouTube at all?
Yes. As at the time of this recording, the government is shutting TikTok down. And so just today, I literally finished downloading all of my TikTok videos, which I will be uploading to YouTube and creating new content as well.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to get political and get involved with the TikTok thing, but actually China is taking it down before the government is.
Oh.
Yeah. China is doing a preemptive strike. They're saying, because the Supreme Court still has it on their docket, and they haven't voted on it yet. So, but China said that on Sunday, which is 2 days from now, that they're going to shut off TikTok in the United States, and it's like a preemptive FU to America. Like, so if you don't want us, we're going to take it away before you can ban us. So, one way or the other, it's gone. So, and good riddance, in my opinion. So.
Well, I'll argue that TikTok was an incredible tool to help me.
Oh,
there was a huge ex-Mormon community there where I felt so alone and so isolated. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. as an ex-Mormon, and I got on TikTok and I found people like me sharing their stories, and they were able to validate me, and I've met with several of them in person. They've been remarkable.
Oh,
it's been a great experience.
TikTok is a tool like any other electronic that if used correctly and for the right purpose, not silly videos and political views or whatever, but for what you're doing it for, absolutely. It can be a great tool. I when I say good riddance to TikTok, it's because of what's going on. China is spying on us, but I do not want to start getting political on it. So, okay. So think that you found your niche in making an income to support yourself and your child through online content creation.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to go to a bar and film video or stream the podcast episodes from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we've done 4 so far. We've had a guest who had left a splinter of the Mormon church. He was in a polygamist cult and then joined mainstream Mormonism, which we did away with polygamy back. Sorry, I can't say we because I have nothing to do with this church any longer, but Mormons decided that they would no longer practice polygamy when they settled in Utah in the 1800s. And then the U.S. government said, well, in order for you to be a state, you need to stop polygamy. And so they claimed that they received revelation from the Lord saying, oh, by the way, this polygamy that we started, that Joseph Smith started when he organized a religion, the Lord says we need to stop it now. But the church was also incredibly deceptive then. They sent people to Canada and Mexico to continue polygamous practices.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Would you be interested in hearing about some of the practices within the Mormon religion that are a little more kooky, that are unique to Mormonism?
Absolutely. Oh, please.
Yes. So in the Mormon faith, they have a very strict word of wisdom of what they are allowed to consume. And I talked a little bit about it before. We're not allowed to drink alcohol or coffee or tea. And this was supposed to be a code of health for us. It came back, but it's very different. It's what it says in the scriptures, very different from the way people live now. Because when it was written, they'd say, oh, eat meat sparingly in the time, and only eat it in time of like winter and famine. Growing up in the church, I don't remember having a meal without a big old slab of meat. They don't follow it to the word, but that it's very restrictive in what you can consume, which is part of a cult. When you're old enough, you can go to the temple where you can make additional covenants with God in what they call an endowment ceremony, and the clothing you have to wear in an endowment ceremony is really trippy. You can look some of these up on YouTube where people have snuck their phones into the temple ceremonies. You dress really, really, really awful. And then they have you make these covenants where you bow your head and say yes without really understanding what you're covenanting to do. And you're given a new name, and you're able, the wife needs to whisper her new name to the husband, but the husband does not need to whisper his new name to the wife, clearly, as he's the patriarch of the home. And there are signs and tokens you have to do in the temple, secret handshakes to get to go see God in heaven. And you're not allowed to talk about these things in the temple because they're too sacred.
Of course. Mm-hmm. What the clothes that they made you wear. So in many of the episodes that we've done, we've heard that a lot of the cult women have to cover most of their body. Is that what you had to do?
Yes. When you're old enough to go to the temple, you get these garments, which are long underwear. It's kind of like a jumpsuit. Goes from a top and bottoms. It covers the shoulders for women and goes all the way to the knees. And so women are not allowed to show their shoulders or their midriffs because one of the authorities of the church said that women, when you're doing this, you're becoming pornography.
Oh, please.
Yes. He said that over the pulpit.
Were you encouraged, and I'm going to ask this every time I hear this kind of rhetoric from a cult, were you encouraged for your husband, for your marriage to stay healthy and sexy, and maybe sexy is not the right word, but because we've heard a couple of cults where they wanted the women to become, they gain weight. And what did the Mormons do?
I think that's unique to any couple. And it wasn't necessarily the case in my marriage or my marriages, but I would assume that some people would think that. I don't think that's unique to Mormonism though.
Okay. Yeah, we just heard stories where they made the wives overeat and become not attractive. So the husbands.
That was actually Vina, and she used the word frumpy. And said that it was kind of encouraged to dress frumpy and make yourself more unattractive. And she was an ex-Mormon.
Oh, it's very interesting because in Utah or in Salt Lake area where we are, it is so popular to have plastic surgery. We've got billboards for plastic surgery. I think we have more plastic surgery per capita in this region of the nation because I think they're very vain and they want to be seen as perfect, like perfection. If there are a lot of shows that talk about Mormons, like The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives and The Real Housewives of Salt Lake will talk about this vanity, this culture, which is only true for the wealthy, I think.
Right. And I'm sure, like you said, it depends on your bishop. So every sect does not have the exact same beliefs because a lot of it is it has to do with leadership.
Right. Yeah.
And once again, this is just an example of the cults. Any cult that we cover or have covered is that they have these rules. So like, you can't commit adultery and you have to wear skirts that cover your knees and your sleeves. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned a whole bunch of others, but yet it's going on behind the scenes. So coming out as trans, coming out as gay was prohibited, but there were gay members, there were trans, and there were polygamists, and there were cheaters, and they're all behind the scenes, and they all cover that up, right? So, and it really comes down to that. The Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses and everybody else, we're human and we're fallible. And we're going to, even though we're taught, cover yourself and do this and follow the Bible and yada, yada. You're going to find people that are going to, behind the scenes, you hear so many of the Southern Baptist priests that preach pornography is horrible, yet they find so many, you know, pedophile pictures on his computer. So
it's true. That was another thing that let me leave the church. Mormons use what's called a shelf analogy, because when things don't make sense, you put it on your proverbial shelf. You put this out of sight, put the back of your mind. Maybe you'll get answers to that when you get to heaven. And one of those things for me was the cases of abuse that are covered up by the LDS church. They do a really good job at saying, oh, you know what? We don't want to ruin this young man's life. So, you know what? We're not going to accuse him. So oftentimes bishops who are the ward's clergy will have people come and confess to them saying, hey, I've done this horrendous crime. The bishops, in cases of sexual assault or any other kind of violence, call the church's lawyers before they will call. I mean, they don't call the police. They call the church's lawyers who will advise them what to do. There's a website called floodlit.org in which they share all of the different cases of sexual assault which happens within the Mormon church that has been covered up by the leaders of the church.
Good.
But unfortunately, people within the Mormon church, when we bring it to their attention, the cognitive dissonance says, well, you know, the church is perfect. The church is good. Men are fallible. People are fallible. No. Yes, people are fallible, but the people who are fallible are the leaders of the church. They know that this is wrong. They know that the church isn't true. They know, and they continue to perpetuate the lies, which is why I'm speaking out.
And so if there's a pedophile among them or somebody who sexually abused a minor, whatever, they don't want to ruin his life, but the child's life is now permanently ruined with trauma. I'm bringing up things that just do not make sense. So let's protect the man who is the perpetrator, but the child who at 6 years old was raped.
The teaching that really gets, that chaps my hide really, is the teaching to turn the other cheek, to just forgive 70 times seven, to become a doormat for your abuser. Because I was always taught that if you did not forgive your abuser, God would judge you more than he would judge the abuser. And so it was always, the church is great. Over the pulpit, they will say, yeah, if you are an abuser, you need to stop. But when it comes to the way they advise victims of abuse, it's always forgive your abuser. It's completely wrong. It's not okay. I didn't learn about boundaries until I was in my late 30s. And that was a really hard thing for me to, and I'm still learning how to establish and maintain boundaries.
So you, if my math is correct, we're in early 2025, and you left sometime in July of 2023?
Yes.
So you're out a year and a half, give or take?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
She's early out.
Yeah, she's early out, right. So how is your deconstruction going? It sounds like you're enjoying life and you're enjoying some of the things that the rest of society enjoys.
And I think it's going to be quite a process. I don't know how long this deconstruction process will take place, but I was deep in for 45 years. I don't expect to just get over it. I have a lot of Mormons on my TikTok page who use the phrase that I know I used at one point. Well, you know, you can leave the church, but you can't leave it alone. And I look at that and think, can you shout, I'm lacking in empathy, any louder? I'm leaving an abusive organization. I have to heal from religious trauma. It's going to take me some time. My goal in life is to become an ex-Mormon one day. What? Where I can leave it all behind and say, oh, wow, that was a part of my life once upon a time. But I'm going through the process now. I consider it a part of a grieving process, leaving your identity behind, your community. It's grief, and grief is not linear. So I will have phases of depression and anger and joy, and I'll keep coming back until one day I'll heal from it.
Kate, we got to begin to wrap up, but I have a very important question. We had this discussion, I think either last night or with another guest recently, that we're seeing some of the larger cults like Jehovah's Witness, like the Amish, like the Mormons, maybe even the House of Yahweh, that the children that are being brought up are leaving.
Yes.
Are you seeing that in the Mormons? Like,
I am, and I'm very happy for it. I want to say, as a former educator, I have critical thinking skills, taught in schools, to thank for that. A lot of the analogy I like to use is when I was a school teacher, I would teach critical thinking to my kids, where they would have to read two opposing passages and they would have to get evidence from the text to form an opinion and then and use that evidence to support it. So when I talk about it, I think of something I had to do with my students that were in third grade. We would do a passage about what's better, cats or dogs, something simple and benign like that for 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds. And we would read a passage about why cats were the best, and we would read a passage about why dogs were the best. We'd read both, highlight both, and then they could make an informed, educated decision. When I think of religion teaching critical thinking, it's as though they're saying, all right, kids, we're going to learn again today why dogs are the best. And we're only going to be reading from this passage which says why dogs are the best. No, don't read about anything about why cats are good, because that's anti-dog and you're not allowed to read that in my class. You need to go to the dog material and find that, and you need to write this even if you don't agree with it. That's what religion teaches. That's how religion teaches critical thinking, which is not critical thinking at all.
No, not at all. No.
So I love that the schools, as a former educator, I was really encouraging and pushing critical thinking to my kids because it will help them make decisions for themselves.
Good.
No, absolutely. Good. No, I mean, that's like living in an echo chamber.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you can do it too within your own, like as an ex-Mormon, I can get an ex-Mormon echo chamber, and it's important for me to look at different perspectives as well and try to develop empathy for people who are still in a cult, because you never know you're in a cult when you're in a cult.
No, no, exactly.
All right, Kate. So I'm going to imagine that many Mormons, either current or ex, will listen to not only this podcast, but your upcoming podcast. So what piece of advice can you give any Mormon? PMO?
PMO, there you go.
Physically in. See, I'm learning.
They're learning. God, right. Learning the terms, Andrew.
So what advice can you give them if they want, like, to start to critically think, and they start to, like you, they may find themselves in a situation where they have to make a choice between the husband and the child. What advice can you give them? Where can they turn to for help and guidance?
I think the most important thing to do is to develop empathy skills. If you're still a Mormon and you're in the church, it's important for you to listen to people who have left the church. Listen to their pain. Don't dismiss it. Ask them, what is going on? What caused you to leave? How can I help? Rather than saying, ooh, that's too scary for me. I'm going to la, 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 la. I'm not going to listen. It's important to listen to people and show up for them in love. It's also important to give yourself grace. If you are leaving a high demand religion, give yourself some compassion and some empathy for yourself, because you didn't know better. And when you know better, you do better. And still continue to have empathy for people who are in the church. I also am a huge believer in boundaries as well, to determine what is okay for you, to learn to have empathy for people and establish boundaries, because both are possible and they make for a much healthier lifestyle.
One more question, and it's a personal question, and feel free to not answer it, but do you have a new man in your life?
I don't yet. I'm looking.
Okay. All right. Come over to my other podcast, because it's all about dating. So,
I'm still learning all the things. Yeah.
All right. Well, good for you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your experience with us. And we wish you all the best in your new podcast. Sounds amazing. It sounds like a good time.
Yeah, I'll tune in. So let us know when it drops, when your trailer, I don't know if you're doing a promo or trailer, but when it drops, we'll promote it, and I'll follow it. I'd love to hear it.
If you'd like to find us now, we're Two Nomos, TWONOMOS, just on Facebook. We're getting our website ready to go. You can follow me on YouTube. I'm Midlife Exmo. An Exmo who's going through her midlife. So that's where you can find some of this information as well.
Great. And all of Sounds those like a great links concept. Will be in our, yes, all those links will be in our show notes as well for the audience. If you're looking to find Kate and locate her social media platforms, they'll be there.
Great. Thank you so much, you two. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you,
Kate. Thank you for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it as well.
So once again, we want to thank Kate for coming on the show and sharing her story with us. I'm going to say again, because we and I say it so many times, Andrew, but I'm going to say it again. I'm going to be a broken record here. Sometimes I'm a broken record that we're talking about abuse inside of an organization again. And again, just as an FYI, if the reputation of the organization is more important than the most vulnerable members, which are the innocent children, the most innocent members of the group, that is a huge red flag, and you know there's a problem.
I cannot agree with you more. When I heard that, and especially, and that's why I asked her again. Remember, we talked about this the other night about our as the children grow up in these cults, I think the more they see social media, or they see movies, or whatever they're gonna see in the world, they're gonna realize that what's going on inside their cult is not normal. And right. I think more and more and more. So this is an example as a and she didn't say whether whatever.
Trans,
so
yes.
Which is fine, but this young person struggled with an identity, and they suffered for years because the church, I don't know, they shunned them or her or whatever.
Well,
but
they
it's
just
horrible.
Basically teach that they're going to go to hell and that
but,
it's not acceptable.
Right. So can you imagine
confused.
That? Yeah. So I'm 15 years old, and I feel as if I'm in the wrong body. But my Bishop tells me that I'm going to go to hell and burn or something. Right. I mean, what is this? Exactly. What do you say? How do you tell that to a child?
Yep.
Oh, come on.
Exactly. And, you know, and the other thing I liked about Kate's message was at the end there where she talked about not only empathy on both sides, empathies of current members trying to have empathy for ex-members, ex-members having empathy for current members, and then having turning around and having that empathy for yourself during your healing process. All of that, super important, really good stuff. And I'm excited to go listen to her podcast. As of right now, it hasn't come out. But by the time this episode airs, I'm sure I will have listened because I'm looking forward to hearing some of her podcast as well. So I plan on going and checking that out. And I'm going to recommend that, you know, the audience goes and checks out her podcast as well. And so once again, we want to thank Kate for coming on the show. And we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. And as always, your support is so appreciated. And if you enjoyed this episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, it would be so appreciated. And if you don't, and also don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes as well.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can also find us on additional platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, and Threads.
And if you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, please reach out to us at cultdomainpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your story.
And for any ex-cult members that are in need of additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And you can also check out my other podcast, The Anonymous Andrew Modern Dating Podcast, for more content, especially if you're single or you're just looking for a fresh insight into the modern dating scene. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can support us through... All right, so in the show notes, you're going to see at the very top, right under the episode number, it's going to say, buy us a cup of coffee. And that's simply a link where you can click on and donate $5 or $10. You are not subscribing. You are not signing up. We're not taking your email. We're just asking you to donate some money
it's
to help us.
It's a one-time donation, not reoccurring.
Correct. And because this podcast is we're paying for it out of pocket. And anything that you can donate would help.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.